different shade of blue into beach sequence. This is on my list of records to never be without. Incidentally, also the least successful U2 album ever, because it's like not something. It's not. I know how that goes. So I'm going to read you a bit from Wikipedia about it, and I'm not the world's largest Wikipedia fan anymore. It was fantastic 15 years ago, but when I know the topic and the article is good, I know when the article is good. And I think that this one is good, and I actually quite like it. Somebody with love in their heart and a lot of knowledge wrote this. So, P.S. passengers on Planet Waves FM, part of Pacifica Radio Network. Just get a little station ID in there. And we just got $1,000 contribution from someone who's been very generous with Planet Waves. I want to thank you, my listeners, for your generosity. We are able to pay for a lot of reporting and to pay the bills. And this Roundup testing initiative that I'm very, very excited about. It is still not too late to get in on that. The more money, the more samples, the better this first article is going to be. A testing food, organic and non-organic food, for the presence of Roundup, and getting some real numbers finally on that. All right, now, much more fun than Roundup in food. Original soundtracks, part one. So sometimes bands get into a rut and they can't get out of it, and like the one really smart person in the band leaves, because like I believe Linda from Four Non Blondes, like it may just happen many times. Happened to the Beach Boys. The Beatles kept reinventing themselves. That's why the Beatles albums are so great, and the non-writing partners in the band like Ringo came along. They were willing to keep changing every time that they came out. So U2 gets stuck, basically. This is in the late 90s, right? They've had this fucking astonishing career, and they're stuck. So who do they call? They call their friend Brian, who's like, he's just the guy. He is the guy you call when you're stuck and you want a new way to do things. So Wiki says, Original Soundtracks 1 is an album recorded by U2 and Eno under the pseudonym Passengers as a side project. Came out 6 November 95, Scorpio. The album is a collection of songs written for mostly imaginary films. Owing to Eno's involvement as a full songwriting partner in the album's experimental nature, the moniker Passengers was chosen to distinguish it from U2's conventional albums. It was commercially unnoticed by the band's standards, which were very high, and received mixed reviews. Yeah, go figure. Guest musicians on the record included Italian opera singer Luciano Pavarotti, who I cried through this today, watching the video, and producer Howie B., who would co-produce U2's following album, Pop. So they're working with Eno, the greatest producer of all time. They've got another producer, Howie B. They've got a lot of ideas going in. According to Eno, near the end of the recording sessions for U2's 1993 album, Zooropa, the band hit a stone wall and were getting obsessive about small details. Yes, we know that about U2. How dare you use that pedal that you used on the last album? Eno suggested that the group do some improvisation. Just turn on the tape and play. So we were working with a broad brush rather than the one hair brushes we'd been using. It was designed to open us up a little, quote, quote. Now, who said that? I don't know. It must have been Bono or somebody. The resulting recording sessions were productive enough that Eno advocated the band undertake more. After they completed their Zoo TV tour in 93, the band returned to the studio with no particular agenda or a project on which to work. The original intention was to record a soundtrack for Peter Greenaway's film The Pillow Book. Though that plan did not come to fruition, Eno suggested they continue recording for imaginary films. The result was 25 hours of experimentation that produced Original Soundtracks 1. At this time, the U.S. charts were dominated by movie soundtrack albums and singles. Once Eno pointed out that it would not be a real ploy for radio airplay, but a spoof of one, U2 agreed to the concept. Yeah. So that's how this album came out. The just a little moment of self-congratulation here. The producer Rob Fraboni, who produced the Planet Waves Bob Dylan album, who I've become friends with over the years, once said to me that my music had the open-ended feeling of music soundtracks, and I knew exactly what he meant, and I took it as the highest compliment. An unfinished feeling, he said. It's like, yes, that's exactly what I want. An unfinished feeling. It's just there. So anyway, that was that. So listen, here's my show plan for the rest of the program. We're currently at exactly 2 hours and 36 minutes. I'm going to give a little bit of astrology. Most of it will come out in my article tomorrow. I want to, and I'm going to hold off on Tantra. I've got an idea for Tantra Studio, but it's obviously not appropriate to do it now, and the show's getting long, and I'm going to do it as a standalone later in the week. But I've got a concept for Tantra Studio that fits all of the aforementioned mishigas of the past, well, 2 hours and now 37 minutes and 16 seconds. But not tonight. And you've had enough. But let's talk about astrology for a second. Stick a little in, you know. Big astrology podcast sticks it in kind of as an end note. But I try to make it good. And let me open up Sprite. And we are now at the Venus retrograde. That takes place, station, Venus goes retrograde, May 13, 2020. That's now. Couple of days, 2:45 a.m. Eastern time. So this is the relatively rare retrograde of Venus, retrograde about 8% of the time, least of all the planets because it's moving the closest to the Earth. And the retrogrades of Venus have been famous, and the two last retrogrades of Venus in Gemini have been famous because they were the Venus transits of the Sun that occurred in 2004 and 2012. Remember those? When Venus went past the Sun. In other words, during the interior conjunction, when Venus passed between the Earth and the Sun, the latitude and the declination were lined up, and you could watch Venus go across. There were photos everywhere and so forth. So the last time that Venus was retrograde in Gemini, or if you're Mike Bloomberg, Gemini, was 8 years ago, 2012, big 2012, and nothing happened. And then previously, 2004. So Venus retrograde in Gemini is reputed, and it's a big thing. And this is the first Venus retrograde in Gemini since probably the one in 96, I'm going to guess that's when it happened, because it seems to happen every 8 years in Gemini on a very predictable schedule, where there was the transit of Venus, which was a big event, and also a big event for the Mayans, who were great, tremendous fans of Venus and Venus retrograde. So from the large perspective, the meta perspective, here's the thing to know about this. It is going to be, it's not going to be 2012-y. It is 2012-y. All of that stuff that we were saying in all the panels and books that were written and articles that were written saying, oh, it was going to happen in the movie 2012 and all this. Oh, it's happening in 2020. And so, not quite the floods. We just haven't had any floods yet this year, but we're coming into hurricane season. But the whole, like, apocalypse-type sequences are all coming out now. And so even though this Venus retrograde and its transit of Venus, not transit, its interior conjunction of Venus and the Sun, which takes place on June 3rd, 2020, right near the node of Venus, but not close enough to be a transit of Venus, which happened very rarely. They're like century events, 120 years, something like this. They're rare events. But it's going to recall that because the 04 and the 12 retrogrades of Venus and Gemini were both transits of Venus. And so we again have another event where the astrology is speaking to us about the large scale of things, things on the scale, for example, of the Mayan calendar, things on the scale of the long count, shall we say, rather than just the Tzolk'in, the short count. We're seeing events that are kind of culmination events of our society. Our whole world society is going to change now one way or the other, meaning that if you really look at the political agendas associated with this whole so-called health crisis and the what you now understand, if you've listened this far, is that when I said, remember I said that's the ice cube on the tip of the iceberg? Now you have an idea. This retrograde of Venus is going to be one of the decisive events in making up our minds about the world we want, the country we want, and what we're willing to accept tacitly, actively, whatever. And it does not take many people to be paying attention and to not get too dissuaded and shut down by those who are saying, no, nothing's going on. A bat kissed a chinchilla and made out with a giraffe and then everybody got sick. Yeah, right. We are in this culmination moment. And so the retrograde of Venus is one of the events on the way to this next stage. The next stage begins with a Jupiter-Saturn conjunction on the winter solstice, summer solstice if you're down under and watching your garden get, you know, turn brown, and the winter solstice up here if you're wondering why it's so damn warm, is the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction in the first degree of Aquarius. Jupiter-Saturn conjunction as well being a 20-year event, again, a rare event, a year of rare events all coming up at the same time. And on the way to Jupiter conjunct Saturn, on the winter solstice, there's a series of, like, time locks that happen. And one of them is Venus retrograde in Gemini. Another one is the series of Jupiter-Pluto conjunctions. Then there will be the Mars retrograde from 9/9/20 till 11/13/20. I know that because I had to say it 12 times, at least, doing the Dharma readings, which are out. Then, finally, after Venus retrograde, the eclipse on 6/21. There's a big eclipse on 6/21. By the way, recalling the eclipse of June 21st, 2001. There's all these echoes of all these big, big years culminating in kind of a holographic form in 2020. So there's the eclipse, then there's another Jupiter-Pluto conjunction, then there's Mars retrograde, then that ends. Jupiter and Saturn together enter Aquarius. They form a conjunction in the first degree of Aquarius. What we're experiencing are the series of time lock steps along the way. Like, imagine we're going through a canal and there's different levels. And so the ship has to go up and down, and then the water level is raised. The ship enters the lock. The water is raised. Very clever invention. And then the lock is opened and the boat is on the new level. That's this series of events. The Venus retrograde, Jupiter-Saturn series, Jupiter-Pluto series of conjunctions currently ongoing. We've had two of the three of them. The conjunction in the first degree of Cancer on the 21st of June, an Aries point event, the retrograde of Mars in the autumn, and then the conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter on the winter solstice. We cannot be abdicating our necessity, our urgency to choose the future that we want. We are choosing the future that we are going to get as we speak right now. If we are awakened, we will get an awakened future. If we sleepwalk through this, we will get a sleepy future where we have contact tracers who are going to be hired by the drove this summer, because there's 30 million newly unemployed people who will take a job doing anything, even if it involves spying on their neighbors and saying when they went to Walmart. We have to choose what we want. Every additional awakened person who calmly awakens and says, what can I do about this? How can I add my energy in a positive light to this situation? Counts. Every consciousness counts. Your consciousness counts. So, Venus retrograde begins on, I started writing down the date, and I jokingly thought, oh, when I have to write down what day of the week it's happening, that's when we're close. But I still forget. I have this kind of problem lining up days and dates. You would think I'd be really good at it. Wednesday, May 13, is when Venus stations retrograde. Venus stations retrograde conjunct Vesta and conjunct Aspolus. And there's another point back in there. I've got to go look at an older chart where I've got it. The inner planet retrogrades are the deeply personal part of the work, of the planetary work. You cannot effectively do planetary work until you've had a deep reconciliation with yourself on some level. Your personal healing work does not need to be completed for you to be effective, but it needs to be begun and approached with devotion, engaged in as a process. So the all of the most intensive involvement in investigative reporting, to give one example, which I entered I really enter the curve around in 1990, and did smaller big investigations, not global, like things that affected all of New York City or all of New York State. And when the transition came in, and all of that preparation was A Course in Miracles preparation. I didn't have really any therapy to speak of at that point, but I had a lot of spiritual process work with A Course in Miracles. And then when I entered the phase where my writing had global impact, right before that time, I entered therapy with Joe Truso. And so I had a couple of layers of my process going. So what I'm here to tell you as someone who's been down many of these roads is, don't think you have to be all healed and perfect, but you have to be committed to, involved with, and invested in your healing process, and your healing process has to be part of the relationships that you're in. In other words, your relationships all become part of that healing process, which is also a growth process, which is also a self-actualization process. I've said a number of times, and I've devoted a whole special edition of Planet Waves FM to this, which is on the Daily Astrology tab. If you're looking for it, go to planetwaves.net and go to Daily Planets, which I apologize, I've been having to update that in the morning. I'm just always a little bit too much that day to have a fresh mind to write the next day's astrology. But today, I added the special hour-long edition of Tantra Studio, done as a standalone, like I'm going to do it next week, associated with Venus retrograde conjunct Vesta. And I talk about the deeply personal inquiry involved here. And I'll summarize it briefly for you, and maybe, who knows, out of that something new will happen. My take on Venus retrograde in Gemini conjunct Vesta is, when you add all those factors up together, you come out with a synergy that says, this is the time to learn your interior language. And it's the ability to learn your interior language where you're communicating with yourself in a language of emotional intelligence, not merely chatter, not merely ideas, but where you have engaged a sensitivity for yourself. And my theory here is that the time to do the inner work of and inner devotion and committing to your healing path, much of which involves committing to a path of sexual healing, Venus conjunct Vesta retrograde says nothing if not a personal inquiry into sexual healing process, in particular the healing process of guilt and shame, which Vesta points to in large ways, in deep ways. And the most significant Vesta piece is the devotion piece, the devotion to your healing process. There are many things that will take you off of that. There are many people who are distracted. People have every possible excuse not to deal with the pain that they've experienced and that has been inflicted upon them, and that in some cases they've inflicted upon others. There's a million excuses to avoid this and to not deal with it. If you want to do this, there's no way around addressing this pain that you may be feeling. It is easier when you actually go there. It is but the first few steps on the path that are difficult and that seem awkward. Once you take a couple of steps along this new journey, you will not want to go back, because you're finally in a new space with it, where you're really doing the work of self-reconciliation. That is what I think this Venus retrograde is about, is self-reconciliation. I think that Mikovits is very wise to say that the scientists who have participated in this fraud, often unknowingly or often motivated by the things people go into big careers for, which is recognition, achievement, money, and fame, need to forgive themselves for what they've done. Those are the words of a wise person of faith. And that is what I would suggest to you, that this is an inner reconciliation. Touching on part of what I was going to do in Tantra Studio, but there's more. And this is about your language with yourself, your own personal audioglossia, your personal language. All right. We are at that moment. I'm going to bid you farewell for the evening and thank you for accompanying me on this very revolutionary journey. I was not expecting any of this. Thought I might say a few things, but I have learned a lot tonight. This piece is called Slug. It's not the best of Passengers. That'll be for next time soon. Lots of love, and bye for now.
carpet and the floor. Don't want to take your drugs. Don't want to be a slug. Don't want to overdress. Don't want to make a mess. Don't want you to confess. Not under duress. Don't want to be untrue. I want to be with you. Don't want to lose my mind.